The hit movie Bob Marley One Love is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life of an icon who inspired generations with his message of love, peace, and unity. Rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
We are coming back to Atlanta right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yep, yep, Ghetto Boys is back and reloaded. All in your mouth, yeah, now deep throated. This is for the streets, the real, the railroaded. The disenfranchised, the truth, the scapegoated.
And they know it, we speak the truth, so they quote it. Cause we wrote it, the north, south, the east coast. It's the GB knock, we keeping your head bobbing. It ain't no stopping.
And once the beat drops in, violins, the system is so corrupt. They throw the rock out their hands and then blame it on us. It's GB. Don't get it twisted. On code and we ain't dancing for no buttermilk biscuits.
It's Willie D, y'all. Ghetto Boys in the house. Back with another episode of information and instructions to help you navigate through this wild, crazy, beautiful world. In the studio, visionary of the year candidate for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, Jasmine Terry.
Hello.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
What an honor to be doing something that helps save lives.
Absolutely.
Right? How long have you been involved with this?
So I was nominated early part of the year from a friend, Maggie Noel. Mm-hmm. She participated last year, fundraiser. And we prepped, I guess, for a few months on, you know, the direction and if you're serious about it. And so I was like, you know, I'm all in. You know, leukemia actually is something that runs in my family. So it
Your
was
great-grandma.
My great-grandmother. So yeah. It was something that's really personal to me because no one in my family knew what happened to her. We literally didn't know. I was at the age of 3 at the time, but my grandmother passed away within a week and a half's time period. So my family was like, what is this? It's cancer. But, you know, the culture-wise of not sharing if there's health issues and if there's information, she didn't really know what's going on. So by the time we found out, she passed away the following week. Mm. So there was a lot of testing in the family, like, okay, you have leukemia, her kids, my grandmother, my aunt, to my mother, and now to myself, just to make sure, you know, it's a bloodline, especially with a lot more research. You know, it's definitely more evident and it's a lot more prominent. You know, there's resources to actually go to. So when I was asked to be a part of this and to be nominated to be a Visionary of the Year, I was highly honored, honestly, mm-hmm. To be a part of such an amazing organization and to give back, you know, and learn in this process as well.
How old was your grandmother when she died?
She passed away. I would say she was in her 60s.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry. She was actually in your great 50s.
This was your great-grandmother.
Yeah, I passed away at three. I mean, my passed away. She passed away when I was 3 years old.
Yeah.
So she passed away in 89. Right. And my grandmother was living, so this is my grandmother's mother. So yeah, right. She passed away in her late 50s, I would say early 60s, to be honest.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and to pass away, and there's no information. So there's, she didn't give us any information. You know, my family's from, my mother's side is from Louisiana. So, you know, when it comes to medicine, right, my family don't believe in medicine. Mm-hmm. You know, my great-grandfather, my great-grandmother is, everything is in the pantry, you know, from honey to the everything that comes from the farm. So trusting doctors, trusting physicians, that's been even as a child, that's a no-go. Something's wrong. Let me fix this for you. Focusing on your gut, you know, and things of that. So this was her in real time, that she had no control of what's going on. And the remedies that she was possibly doing for herself, it didn't help the situation. And so by the time she let the family know, I have leukemia, she passed away shortly after. You know, so it was very devastating. Of course, I was a kid, but I remember as a child, my mother and my grandmother, I remember the funeral. I remember my grandfather. And I'm like, what happened to Granny? You know, like, what, you know, because we had such a close connection, you know, even now, you know, family, you look so much like your great grandmother, you know, y'all are similar, the same, you know, you act just like her, you know, all these things. And, you know, to know that she passed away without any research really being available to her, you know, it's a disconnect, you know, so.
I'm tripping a little bit on you being able to remember at 3 years old.
Oh, yeah.
I think my earliest memory is somewhere around five, maybe four and a half, five.
Yeah. So I remember, you know, for me, energy. I remember smells. I remember feelings. And I think that's energy is so important, like connecting. Like, I can't tell you at 3 years old what the conversation was, but I remember what I felt. I remember the smell. I remember the touch. I remember kind of these small memories, but it was really like her energy that more than anything, you know? So, yeah, I do.
Do people in your family typically live to be a long, you know, live to get up in age?
You know, honestly, on both sides of the family, they do. And I think that's a beautiful thing to have, because growing up as a kid, I had my great-great-grandfather. My great-grandmother passed away, but I had my great aunts that lived to like 105, 100 and I believe Aunt Frieda lived was as long as maybe 106.
My mother's 105. So you're not too spooked by your great-grandma dying at 60, you know, in a 50, 60.
No, not really. Yeah. Because I had such an older... with like an older group of family members to kind of connect with, you know. Now my great-grandmother's daughter, my mother's mother, she passed away fairly early. She passed away in her 50s from some issues. She was depression and other things, but she passed away fairly early. But along those lines, my family lives like a pretty long time, to be honest. And with everything that's going on in the world right now, I think about, because everyone's like, oh my God, you had your great grandfather? Yeah. Like, y'all didn't have your great aunts. And they were like 90s and 80s. And, you know, I think even me growing into a woman and understanding now how important information is, that even on foods and like knowing your culture, you know, knowing different things, there's a lot of people know nothing about their grandmothers. Their grandparents, or didn't have the opportunity. I can go back to like my great grandparents, you know. And that's my mother's side. My father's side, even with my great great grandfather being Jack Yates, and to see like the legacy here in Houston of what he created, you know, and my grandmother now, my grandmother, my father's mother, she's in her mid 80s, you know. So I've always had that type of, blessings, actually, to have family around, and you know, it's like older family. So
yeah, you mentioned your great grandfather, John Henry Jack Yates.
Yeah, yeah,
that dude.
Yeah,
what a legacy! What a lineage to claim.
Yeah, yeah. It's
how proud are you of being, you know, a part of that bloodline?
You know, honestly, growing up, I kind of shied from it. I didn't really. you know, I attended Jack Yates High School. You know, I know about my great grandfather, but I wanted to be cool. I didn't want anyone to be like, oh, okay, you know, this is, you know, this school is named, and yeah, you know, I'm cool.
Badge. I'm like, man, it's my great grandfather's school. Shit, man, don't tell me what to do. In fact, I ain't going to, I ain't coming to school today.
You know, yeah. Like, so, you know, to have that knowledge, right? It was just kind of like, I don't want nobody to know. You know, and school was different then. You know, like you're like, yeah, this school named after my great grandfather.
And it's a trip how we how we trivialize things that are important.
The line.
And we elevate these things that are really important. Like we shy away from things like things that we should be proud of. Like,
man,
you know,
you can't tell me now. Like, don't I tell everybody, even in bios. You know, that is a part of that is historic. Not even for Houston, but just for me and my bloodline, the power. You know, and think about who you are as a person, like what makes you who you are. And I think about myself, like being an entrepreneur, being an advocacy, you know, just how we connected just from talking about what I couldn't say. you know what I mean? And to be able to, it's something that's rooted in me. It's actually something that's actually in, it's in my blood, like to create and to want to help others and how connected I am to my culture as Black culture and my seeking of like, where does all this energy come from? You know, like what makes you, you? And then you have like this information to go back to, you know, it's like, it's powerful, you know, and it's actually a great feeling, like a blessing, you know?
Yeah. I first came across you on the Isaiah Factor show. And I was like, ooh, she got something. She was talking about some type of social issue. I can't remember exactly what it was, but the way you articulated yourself, I was like, oh, yeah, she's sharp. She's sharp. And you stood on it. It was something controversial. You wasn't dancing around it.
Oh, no.
You wasn't mincing words.
Oh, no. That's not me. I wasn't raised to be that way. And, you know, to be able to talk about culture, Black culture, there's no shyness about that. There's no change in my tone. There's no, well, I'm around a certain group, you know, being proud of who you are. You know, that's in my blood, you know, and you stand on it, you know, in any space. And so if it's something dealing with healthcare, if it's education, if it's something dealing with the financial systems, you know, advocacy is important. It's in me.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel connected to do, you know, even with my travels around the world that I do. You know, this is all a part of a learning process, you know. And I don't know where it comes from, but I know
it comes from your bloodline. It comes from your great-grandparent, your great-great-grandparent, perhaps, you know. Like,
just history alone, you know, being a slave in Virginia to be free and to come back to be with your wife in Texas and become a slave again, you know, to not only that, to kind of lead the way through the emancipation, to build, teach your people how to build homes and the importance of land and how to read and, you know, to be a minister, to minister to people. And this is how we create our own economic systems. We don't have to be a part of these systems that that we are given. You know, so this is a person that's been out of slave, came back into slavery. The emancipation happened, then wanted land where we have our own land. We don't need to participate with you. We're going to create our own, you know, these different struggles, you know, the fights that in order just to be yourself. And so to know the legacy that not only my great grandfather's children, we know what my grandmother has done with my father, with my family, just who we are. It's innately in us, you know. So to get on Isaiah Factor show, and I'm gonna say what I gotta say because this is something that's like, you know, it's important to me, you know, and it's carrying information, you know. So it is, you know, and I'm definitely proud now. I'm not saying I wasn't proud as I was immature then. I didn't want to tell people, you know, this is my great grandfather. This school was after, you know. I was like, I don't need to do that, you know. Pretty modest, you know, but that's royalty. You know,
yeah,
and you're airy, so.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded Podcast. We'll be right back after the break.
First he changed music, then he changed the world. The hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life and legacy of an icon who inspired generations through his message of love, peace, and unity. In this powerful and uplifting film, discover Bob Marley's story of overcoming adversity and the journey behind his revolutionary music that changed the world. If you missed it in theaters, now's your chance to watch at home. Stream the hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, now on Paramount Plus, rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you look at the racial climate in this country, there's a lot of division. And there are a lot of people that are in high positions, especially politicians, who are flaming the fire. Considering your lineage, considering what we've been through historically, what's your concern level that slavery could actually happen again?
Slavery is happening right now.
Well, I'm talking about I'm talking about from
like the
centuries ago slavery. You know, the actually having black folks in physical chains, not the mental chains, the chains, but the physical chains, and you know, everything that came with that.
In certain parts of the world, that's happening still, right? We're just talking about America.
Talking about right here in the
right
U.S.
Right, U.S.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen, right? I think there's these systems around us. And I know you said about like physically happening, you know, I don't really think that's going to happen. I know I'm not getting no chains. I don't see it. I mean, what do you think? You think I don't see it.
I can't say what can and what will and won't happen because some things are happening now that I never thought would happen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, hell, Donald Trump became president. He's one of the dumbest motherfuckers in the United States of America. You know, but yeah. You know, I don't know, you know, but I do know this. I'm killing everything. I'm not going to be a slave.
You know, I'm
not going to be a slave, especially knowing what I know.
Yeah.
Knowing what they did.
Well, that's information, right?
Yeah. Especially knowing that what I know, knowing that there is no get back, knowing that there is no mercy, knowing that there is no, there will be no conversations of rationalism.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? None of that.
There will be no rationalizing.
You know, like I already know. Like I'm killing everything.
Walking everything. You know what's a conversation with a friend about how do we get out of these systems, right? Like how, you know, who are we uninterrupted as a culture? And when I say uninterrupted, meaning without the trauma, without your record and, you know, this poverty and all these things, who are we as a culture uninterrupted? We are royal beings.
You already know that.
You already know who you are.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. So it's you have to interrupt in order to shake it up, right? I can't. And so I'm going to interrupt you in education. I'm going to interrupt you in the financial system. I have to interrupt you in so many places because the moment you're uninterrupted, your energy transcends. You're a whole nother, who are you? You know what I mean? And in my mind, I heard something like that. And I was like, who is Jasmine uninterrupted? You know, if I'm not worried about bills, I'm not worried about walking around, if the police is this and what, who am I uninterrupted? And that's from now on, that's how I see myself. I'm uninterrupted, you know, as a culture. So when we look on the news and you see, prime example, you know, the guy that raised $2 million, you know, for now in the GoFundMe. Yeah.
ain't worth a dime penny.
So, you know, what does that look like, right? In the media, what it show, the music, we are so interrupted in so many ways, right? The things that we're listening to, the foods that we eat, it's a part of a system, right? Mm-hmm. How do we get uninterrupted as a culture? And I hate to say it, I don't know other way but to fight, to be honest. And my friends like fighting, you know, and we love, and, you know, I love Martin Luther King. He's a great man. But I also understand what Malcolm X felt, right? Mm-hmm. As a culture. And I just feel that, you know, we're going to have to fight. It's a point where, you know, I'm uninterrupted, period. And so, and by any means, in any way necessary, I will not be interrupted. I don't want to hear. So even listening to the news and sometimes with social media and all these different things, right? That's interrupting. That's interrupting like your mind to think, you know what I mean? The foods we're eating, it's interrupting our systems, the healthcare, all of that. You know what I mean? So if I can be in a place as simple as being uninterrupted, you can't stop me. You can't stop nothing. It's nothing that you can do to do that. And so as a people, if we can figure out ways how we are uninterrupted, meaning if it starts with the children and education, we teach in our own, right? If it goes into building our own hospitals, creating our own wellness cities, you know, creating our own military, because we will be uninterrupted because everybody has their hands on our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. You know, so for me, back to what you were saying about slavery, I don't see it going that far as chains and all of that. I think as a people and at this point in time in life that we have a conscious that is awakening that is beyond just what we see. Right. And it's happening. So therefore, the world is shifting. The earth is purging. It's, you know, I'm into nature. I don't know if you know that, Willie, but.
Oh, I know. So, for me. I've seen you on them horses all in the mountains.
So for me, you know.
Chilling in Egypt, walking on the beach in Morocco.
So for me, you know, that's a lifestyle. That comes with lifestyle. And that's something that you teach others. You know what I mean? Looking in different directions, you know. So I don't see that happening. It's putting us into being slaves and all of that. You know, and I don't think every other culture is bad, but I am focused on my culture. And my goal is to help us be, uninterrupted, period. Mm-hmm. You know, the mind, and to do that. And so with that, I don't see it happening. You know,
that's your ministry.
Yeah, that's my ministry.
That's your ministry. Your ministry is helping people.
Yeah.
Service.
The voice of the voiceless. Yeah.
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 That's your ministry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because even when you do it with your event center, your event center is not just, you know, fuck you, pay me.
Yeah.
It's we're going to provide a superior experience.
Absolutely.
You know, and we're going to create a beautiful space for you to come. It's going to be a warm and welcoming space.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to feel it. You're going to feel that personal touch. I mean, I felt it myself.
You I appreciate it.
I think I had the first event at your event center in downtown Houston.
That, you know, the reason for me opening Le Chateau, and of course, all of this is energy for me. Everything is energy. So it was to create a safe space for creatives, right? I complain, ain't nowhere to go in Houston. At some points, it was like the clubs. It was like, you're going to tell me what I can wear. I see you profiling by the clothes or, you know, just certain things. I want a space where we can be safe and connect, grow, and learn. So it's not just opening a bar. You know, Le Chateau Houston for me is a space where we can be safe and also connect. So we can have great eats. We can have music where creatives from all over the world, because Houston being such a big city, there's not like a place, a platform where indie artists just really come in. You have like your Warehouse Lives and you have like these other places, but there's no hub of like, this is where talent is made, you know? So I wanted to be able to participate in creating that rhythm in Houston. And it doesn't have to be just a club and your normal live music shows, but there's so many forms of art that I want Le Chateau to be able to display, you know? So from theatrical art to musicians, to dancers, you know, singers, like all of that into the space, and even art of networking with other people. How do you get into a room and connect? A lot of times I want to go talk to Willie D, man. I want to, you know, how do you do that? How do you, when you have that opportunity, how do you connect? You know, so it's really like a, like you said, I guess, a teaching space, right? Mm-hmm. To having a safe space for culture. And then you also having these different, you know, different places I visit around the world. I was like, I want to bring it back to Houston. And if you didn't go with me, I want you to be able to see through my eyes what I saw. And so whether it's in other countries and we come back and these different performers of sounds and music to place it into this place, that's what Le Chateau is about, you know, to create whatever you want, you know. So when I initially opened, that's the plan. I closed during COVID. And then from there, I reopened and I'm like, you know, the bar industry is a lot, you know, it was a lot on me. And I don't know how I maintained for 3 years kind of solo. I've never owned a bar before, never worked in the bar, but I was like, okay, I have this vision and everything just happened. You know, even the guys with Earn Your Leisure, you know, I created one programming of Le Chateau, which is the office, which actually today there's an event, a networking event to just kind of connect with people, professionals and entrepreneurs in Houston, and really engaging on how do we, you know, when you're in the room, this is not just looking at each other. Really get to know somebody, not just being around the people that you're close to, actually getting in and connect. So I was able to reach out. They reached out to me, actually. Hey, we like what you're doing in Houston. We want to come down. And to see where they started from with this financial literacy, even him, and shout out to my guy, Wall Street Trap, as well, that talking about the market, the stock market with 19 Keys, like all of them. Well, Wall Street Trap met Earn Your Leisure in my space. And to see where they were then and where they are now. And we all are cool in these relationships, you know what I mean? Le Chateau is a place that you were able to connect and to see that. And then to have them come out. And then to not just them, just different people, musicians and artists. So, you know, for me as a visionary, I just want to create rooms and spaces and energy where things evolve, you know? So instead of having a bar now, it's a, a creative space, you know, so you bring your creativity and we help you make it happen, you know, and it's all about, you know, when I opened Lake Chateau, then I had a lady, because I'm in sophomore San Jacinto, so I'm in the museum district. It's third ward. I had a lady, a white lady. Her name was Karen also. Uh-huh. Karen came in and said, oh, you're opening a jazz bar. And I was like, yeah, I'm excited to tell her. And, you know, she came in as if she wanted to help me.
Yeah, with the peace pipe.
With the, you know, I want to help you. You know, I want you to be successful. Now, she don't know that my great-grandfather helped cultivate this whole area. Where you living with your husband, that's not too far from Emancipation, my grandfather created that space, right? But she doesn't know me. So she's coming in and she's like, well, you know, I want you to be successful in this area. And the food is great. The music is great. But I think the artwork in here, I think you should make it about everybody. I think you should make this space not just about Black culture. It should be about Asian culture. It should be about all these different cultures. You know, it should be about everybody, you know, because that's the way the world is. And I let her talk. And I was so thankful that I handled her with grace, because who are you to come into my business and tell me how I should make space for everybody? Did you go to Papado's and you see all of these pictures of these other cultures on the wall and they have no Black people? Did you tell them you should make this about Black people too? I said, that's the problem. I should be able to be proud, and you should be of my culture and the legacy of Aretha Franklin and Ray Charles and Miles Davis. And you should be in here and be excited to see this experience, because this is a part of my culture. It's not because it's only for Black people. She said, well, when you have things like that, it makes it seem like only Black people are welcome. I said, you're the only one feeling uncomfortable. Making what my culture is doing and me mm-hmm. promoting and wanting a safe space for my people, you feel uncomfortable. And for you to have the balls to come into my business and smile at me and to tell me, be Black, but just don't be too Black.
Yeah.
Make it Black. This area is for everybody. You know, there's Black people here, there's Asian people here. Even more reasons where you should be want to welcome and understand my culture and understand the legacy. It's more than just music, you coming to eat our food and our great. Like, understand this. Come in and connect with people. And I think her husband was from Brooklyn. And so he was, you know, he was really nice, but he could feel like, he was like, I think you were out of line. The next day, the opening, she sends like a flood of flowers. She said, you were so highly aware, and with the way that you handled me with care in that moment, I had no idea what I was doing. Like, for me to come in to tell you, don't make your space about your culture is insensitive. And I didn't even realize this, because I mean, I have Black friends. That was one. You know, I've traveled around the world, and the way that you broke it down to me, I didn't even realize that was me and my form of not being able to connect. And so even with that, you know, Les Chateaux, it was just her. They always came after that, you know, and I forced her to connect with other people. This is what life is about. It's about connecting, you know, like, you can't come in my business and tell me to be Black, but just don't be too Black, because you make me uncomfortable with your Blackness.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded Podcast. We'll be right back after the break.
First he changed music, then he changed the world. The hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life and legacy of an icon who inspired generations through his message of love, peace, and unity. In this powerful and uplifting film, discover Bob Marley's story of overcoming adversity and the journey behind his revolutionary music that changed the world. If you missed it in theaters, now's your chance to watch at home. Stream the hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, now on Paramount Plus. Rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine going to a Mexican restaurant and being offended that there's only Mexicans on the wall, the people who started the restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. These are the people who started, yeah. Generations of people who started, yeah. The restaurants where, you know, I think you should add more diversity here because... To make me comfortable, people like me comfortable.
Make me comfortable.
Yeah.
And you wanted me to work.
But
for that.
But they only do that to us. I know that for a fact. They only do that when a black person owns a restaurant or something. Mm-hmm. And like, no, you put whoever you want to put on the walls. If a person likes the product or services, they patronize the business or they don't. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other. It's like my music.
Mm-hmm.
I make my music for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get it, cool. If you don't, that's cool too.
Yeah.
But I am not about to acquiesce to your style, to your preference, to make you feel comfortable.
Absolutely not.
Fuck you. Straight up.
Right.
Straight up. Like, I'm unapologetic about that. You know, why do we have to change who we are, you know? I mean, but, you know, it's like you like our talents, mm-hmm. you like what we do, but then you want to take it and then you want to make it the way you want to make it and so that you can be comfortable with it.
Like I said, you want to interrupt it.
You want to interrupt it, right.
Know? And so you don't leave us uninterrupted. You want to interrupt in any form because I want you, no. You can't be too good, you know. And I think, and to go back to your point, what you just said about here in America, it's a mentality. So as a person that has traveled in different places around the world, I didn't realize with this whitewash mentality that I've had, right? That when I went to other places, when I went to France, went to Paris, I'm so used to, America has programmed us that we are the center of the world, and we're not. we are behind, right? But we are so great, like Akon said about branding and marketing, right? That we go around, oh, I'm American. You know, the dollar is American. What is the dollar tied to? You know what I mean? Like all of this. Not until I went to China, not until I went to Europe. And I'm seeing like, you know, I'm American. You know, I go there and I think, you don't speak English? Like, we have been programmed. Honestly, so not only are we, in, as Black people, right, and just thinking as humans, I mean, just a culture of people, we're American also. And when I've gone to other places, like, this is not in English. You know, everything is English and French, English. Like, we have this type of supremacy around the world of being like these, this is it, and we're not. And I had someone tell me in China when I was in, it was a program, which seeing what Africa and China is doing in Africa, that's a whole thing. I seen that back in 2014. But baby, you are in another country. I know America, we're popular with the entertainment and, you know, we have this. That was the first time a slap in the face. I was like, we are behind. I am behind, right? Like the kids here are making the games that my children will play. They're creating the technology that I will use. What are we doing? I went there. My friends were like, oh, see if you can get us some hair weave connect or some boutique, some clothes. And I'm like, yeah, girl, I got you. I'm in China. I'm going to be here for a while. Not until I joined the Africa to Business Council that a Chinese girl asked me to join that I realized the conversations were different. And I was quiet because I'm not African. I'm not from Africa, but there was people from Nigeria and other places in Africa, and they were brokering deals. And China, the government in 2014, was creating this Chinese to Africa Business Council, which I have photos to show where, you know, and still a part of this group. We want to do business in Africa. And so why I'm looking at of how can I get the connect on some clothes to start a boutique and some hair, maybe some makeup and, you know, these smaller things. These are people my age brokering big world deals, meaning creating room for tomato paste companies, rice farms, you know. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is like on a bigger scale. You know, I am behind. I'm thinking I'm American and, you know, all of these. No, I'm behind. America is a small part of what the world is. And we made this Donald Trump mentality to be like this thing that we are not. We are falling. I saw this in 2014. I'm like, my God, this is where we are on a scale of what the conversations are happening around the world. So right now to where we understand where the dollar is, and I saw this in 2014, and to see how China has created these alliances around the world, they're in Africa, and I'm brokering deals because they think I'm from Nigeria. I didn't say I wasn't. I just, you know, I'm trying to understand what's going on. And to see this, and I'm like, my gosh, I am really behind. I'm worried about weave. My friend wants to start a makeup line and a boutique. You know, and these are real life. These are global impacts around the world, you know. So as a culture, and I say as an American, so not only being Black, but then you have to get outside of the world. And we've been programmed to think, oh, we big shit.
Well, you know, sometimes they do be hating on us, though, because I lived in Paris for
they do.
And I remember going into the grocery store once.
Yeah.
And I asked for a shaver, you know, a razor.
Yeah.
You know, so I could shave, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm asking about the razors. And it's like maybe like six cash registers, about three cashiers.
Yeah.
And they're all women.
Yeah.
And so and they got people standing in line. And I'm asking about the razors. And she's like, she's talking to me like that, like really like talking down on me, like huh, what? And she's frowning up while she asks. I'm in the tourist area. In the tourist. I know that they want us to try to speak French. I got that.
Yeah.
They want us to make an effort to speak French. But I ain't got time to be making no damn efforts to speak French, man. I got stuff to do. I'm out here trying to vacate. I'm trying to chill, man. So yeah. The woman was like, what say you? And so the other lady she's looking at the other lady, and I see them laughing about it, right? Yeah. So I said, "Do you have any razors, bitch?"
Oh.
And the other one like, "Oh, they're right there."
No,
I mean,
really.
I know, like, hey, man, you know, like, I don't, that,
but
you know,
I, you know what?
Excuse my French and pardon my vernacular, but I ain't usually like that with women, you know, but I mean, she tried to make, and she was insulting me, you know, and.
But you know what another thing,
I wasn't
really,
feeling that at all.
Not until an understanding, like, and she was rude. Don't get me wrong. They can't be, people, other cultures can be rude. The reason why, as Americans, as a totality, not just you and what you mean, when we go places, we think we are the shit.
Yeah.
We think we are the shit. You go to, you're in another country. You go to Mexico. We have had this mentality of, you know, I'm better than you. I'm American.
Collectively, because I've never been that way.
So, right. But honestly, and it's so many people like, ew, your food, ew. Like, what is this? Yeah. You know, because we have been programmed that we are the center of the world and we're not. We're behind in education. Our health is bad. You know what I mean? Our dollar is crappy. And it's bullshit. Not even just Europe. You go to Mexico. We feel as though we're better than other people. You know what I mean? It's a mentality.
Our families have been decimated.
Listen. Yep. And I'll say this. And I, you know, my experience, like for me, I'm going to Ghana. So I went to Ghana in January. I plan on in June to be there all the way through December. I'll come back and forth, but I want to plant my roots in Africa, right? And I'll say this, it's not the thing of, you know, I'm black and I'm, you know, I want to go back to Africa, because that's a whole nother topic of, we're not the same people as far as, because we're black, we're African, it's complete, we're different. We're the same genes, right? But we're different. And me being in Africa and to, not just Africa, but places I've been, right? To go to places when you see people that look like you, right? And you know, in America, we have always been in this capitalist kind of mentality, right? Money, money, money. You know, it's the pressure. But yeah, there's places where they're poor, you know, they don't have what we have in poverty, but they have something way more powerful, which is community, right? If somebody's out there selling chickens and eggs, it's such a community-based culture that is beautiful to me. You know, we can come here and, yeah, money and all this. We're so disconnected on who we are and the things and the soil is bad, you know, so my experience in being there and you welcoming another feeling, you know, I went to Nigeria. Nigeria was cool. You know, I had some incidents with some of my friends I went to college with, you know, because I didn't feel, even though I love the culture, the African Nigerian culture, to learn about it. And I thought like, oh, you know, my ancestry say I'm 40% Nigerian. So, you know, I didn't feel connected. But the minute,
why not?
And again, I am a spiritual person. It's what felt calm to my spirit. I felt like I just didn't think that these are my people. You know what I mean? I love.
Did they make you feel welcome?
Very welcome. Even the people here, my Nigerian friends that are here.
Was it the language barrier?
It's not even the language barrier. I honestly, I live in so much Afro beats and I've talked to so many people in Houston. Houston alone has a lot of Nigerians and people. Mm-hmm. Culture, I love the food. I just thought I did not feel like home to me. When I went to Ghana, when I was 7 years old, I went to Turner Elementary. Bush created, HIZ created a program, the multicultural program. And it was at Turner Elementary where you could pick Europe, Africa, China, and all these other countries that your study was in. And mine was France and mine was Africa. And the focus in Africa was Ghana. And so I met the president, Jerry Rawlings. It's a picture of me, 7 years old. I met him. They had me in this kente clothing. And I remember asking him a question. Why are Africans poor? Like, why are everybody poor? And he just He looked at me and said, Africa's not poor, baby. He said, it's not poor. And he explained, there's so many, because I had no idea. When I thought of Africa, we looked on the television, it was
flies
and kids, and big and bellies.
Famine.
You know, like, oh, yeah. They're poor. He said, it's not poor, you know, and he was telling me the food is so good. We had these tastings of like different types of food. That was my first exposure. Right. So here I am at 36 years old. Well, I went to Africa at 35, but at 36, I was in Ghana. And to be able to connect soon as immediate when I was in Nigeria, Nigeria felt like everybody's chasing money. that's what the feeling, it's a beautiful place, don't get me wrong, but I'm energy, right? And I felt like this, it's beautiful, it's fun, and so I'm going
like
back.
Was in like one of the big cities in America. Like
it was just like
Atlanta.
The energy was just, it was money. Like everything was like about money. But the minute I landed in Ghana, it's a feeling of, it was like, you know, it was a feeling of just peace. A feeling of peace, like seriously. And it wasn't because, and I was like, all right, maybe it's my psych of like, I have always wanted to go to Ghana, so I'm gonna look at it different. The air, the different, it's a different feeling, right? It's not.
Is it different from America?
It's different. It's different, man. To go somewhere and you see money with people, like the faces that look like you, right? Mm. To go to the museum and this is their history. It's not as beautiful or, you know, as big buildings as the States, but it's a quality that you can't get here. It's a feeling of like, man, this is peaceful, right? Like this is to me what life feels like. And I feel like I've experienced some highs and being around, but these people, it's community, rooted in community, you know? And, you know, you have these markets and people are exchanging foods and, you know, it's not as wealthy in some areas, right? But that is to have peace and to have happiness. That is something that money you, and to arrive back in America and you feel, it's like automatic. As soon as you go off the plane, you feel pressure, anxiety. Yeah. Everybody's like, it's this thing. Like I got the money. Oh, it's the news. It's so much pressure, but to be able to go a place that you just feel like, oh my God, this is peaceful.
And I'm assuming that it's the same way when you walk into a store, you feel like, you feel that the person is grateful that you're there and not that you feel some type of burden.
Yeah. And they're welcoming.
You know, like you're a burden. Yeah.
It's a welcoming feeling. It's the welcoming feeling that you feel. And also, let's get to the food. That is live soil. The soil here is dead. You know, when I was in Israel back
That's where everything is manufactured.
Listen.
Food.
It's dead. The food here is not food. When I was in Israel back in 2008, I was in Galil Gaboa. I went to Tel Aviv. I had never tasted fruit before. Like, I love fruit. But it was taste, and I see why they're fighting over the soil. It was a whole nother taste. The food was different. The food in Ghana is different. The taste, like, I'm telling you.
Did it taste great immediately, or was it an acquired taste?
It was great immediately. What you think a great strawberry tastes like, and you have it in another place, you're like, man, this is dead.
Mm.
Even your stomach, right? You know, your gut is really like the mouth of your soul. So if your gut is the mouth of your soul, what you put in replenish the body. If we're putting in fake foods and eating dead corpse and all this craziness, our minds, we're interrupted. We're interrupted within our minds. But to be able to eat high level, like vibrating foods, like it feels different. You're not tired, you know? You're not big because I eat. I'm greedy.
Are you a vegan?
I'm not a vegan, but I think I eventually kind of pescatarian in a sense. And sometimes I don't eat pork. I don't eat any pork. But, you know, I still have these slips. I love even chicken. Listen, I don't eat chicken. I try not to eat chicken here in the States. I'm telling you, and that's, mark my word, Jasmine Terry said that chicken, the antibodies, the things that are in these chickens really mess with your brain. I love Popeyes. Hands down, I don't care how much money I have in the world. You eat it, your mind is messed up. Go, like, really do a cleanse and go eat something that's like that, like the chicken. It throws your mind off. So if you have some imbalances, hormonal imbalance, mental balance, depression, anger, the foods we put in our body really affects that.
So you still eat Popeye's chicken?
No, man.
You cut it all the way out?
I cut it out.
When?
It's been a while. And I'll try it. And every now and then I'll be like, oh, let me. My mind, I'm telling you, like your mind is clear. Like,
how long has it been since you've eaten Popeye's?
Man, it's been like a few years.
Because you know me, I bust a left in the Popeyes and bail out quick.
Listen, Willie, I love Popeyes. But the hormones and the stuff in that chicken and in that food, and you go somewhere else and you eat and you still feel different, the chicken sizes aren't the same.
Mm.
The wings we have here, these big chicken breasts. And then you see what the chicken, because I'm like, this is chicken, this is fish. Yeah, but it's uninterrupted meat.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, this is not, this is, you know, this is food, your stomach, your time to go to the potty. It's a different experience, and it's the body. So that's why the plan is, we can't get y'all want to come over here to Africa. The minute you are, we have to interrupt you to not want to be in these places. Because the minute you go to these places, what's happening? The best thing the government did in Ghana in 2018 was do the return of homecoming. As amazing as Nigeria is, Ghana is thrive. Black Americans are, I mean, homes, there are people are buying land there like crazy. If you see how fast it's going, the market is up and down, but it's going really fast. And you have that experience, and then you think, I'm going to come back here and listen to this? Absolutely
not. So do you plan on moving to Ghana?
I do want to, I do want to live.
You would leave your family behind?
So this is the thing. I want to be able to have experiences in other places, right? I do, but like I said early on about not feeling like that's home, you know, I believe we are the indigenous people of America. We are the indigenous people. I do believe that the Moors were already here, and that's our family. Like, Black people were already here in America. I don't believe that, oh, because I'm Black, I'm from Ghana, and I'm from Nigeria, and I'm from these other places. I do believe that we are indigenous people of America, and it's very important for us to get our land here by any means.
So do you believe, so you don't believe that Africa is the cradle of civilization then?
I do believe
all civilization started in Africa.
All civilization does start in Africa. I do believe that. But even when I was in Ghana and I went to, I toured Cape Coast, the Door of No Return. That's where the last place the Africans were, and they shipped them to the States. They shipped them to Jamaica, the Caribbean areas, all over. I'm just saying that I believe we were already here. Mm-hmm. And I know what I feel like, and whether people believe it or not, this is our land. We were already here. The story of Africa, just all these slaves, millions of slaves that just came through America. Black people were here. The Moors were traveling all over the world before this even happened. So you're telling me, my great-great-grandparents, Black people were already here. Right. And the idea wasn't that the Europeans, the ones that said, hey, let's make Black people, you know, slavery was a form of technology where it's wrong. Right. What they did to us in America is like the worst. Right. But it was a form of technology. The Middle Easterns were some of the ones that influenced the Africans to rally up the Black people to ship them off in the slave trade because we were able to stay outside. White people were coming. They had white slaves too that came into Africa because they wanted to take in the gold. They were dying. They were dying. They couldn't survive there. The heat, you know, their bodies were not. A lot of the Middle Easterns that were in Africa, right? And you need to get more Black people. And yes, Africans were, they were selling off other Africans for trade, for money, right? But my point, what I'm saying is that in America, Black people were here already. Not Christopher Columbus, and I'm not just saying the Native Americans, those are still a part of indigenous people. There are indigenous Black people here that were already here. They needed more in order to do what they were doing, you know? So does that make sense? Like,
I mean,
I just feel like we're saying, of this work.
Yeah, no, you're saying something that I have knowledge of already. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to hear you say it.
Yeah, I think we were already here.
Yeah,
honestly, I don't think that we're the same people. I think what they're doing right now in these forms, they're trying to turn us against each other in the job roles and Black Americans and Africans. So because right now, you think about in music, think about what's happening right now. Think about in jobs, like even with Black Panther, these movies, right? You just think about what's going on in this moment. It's to keep Black people at a lower level.
Perpetuate the lie.
Yes, perpetuate the lie and to turn, instead of us bridging the gap between Black Americans and Africans, we got to turn y'all. Y'all are better than them. Think about what's happening when there's job roles and in healthcare. And yes, a lot of African people are more well off in education than we are the opportunities here in America as Black people. When you think about, they're turning us against each other. Even with this music situation right now, of course, we connect with music. Oh, I want to go to Africa. Oh, Afrobeats and all this. Think about how fast this is going, right? And where is Black people at this moment? Even with this whole immigration thing that's happening with, what is it, Florida, about the immigrants, they can't work. You can't be with your families and all of that. I mean, because I'm for my people, this is the perfect time for Black men that need jobs and need, you know, to have different trades. Go get those jobs. Go get your land. That's what other people are doing when they come here. You know, why are we like, oh, I'm not going to do that. I'm not cleaning up toilets. I'm not going to go build. I don't want to do those jobs. This is a time for us to wake up and to focus and go get those jobs. I'm not knocking any immigrants. I'm not saying about my Mexican friends or not, but I am about my people at this point. Go get those jobs. You know, go get, it's time. Like, in order to have the revenue and some power, because that's what's happening in other cultures. We're still asking people to help us. Help me. Help me. Help me. Serve me. We're so in a slave mentality, like you said, and those people will be in chains, possibly. That would be the case, because we're so like, tell me what to do. These people from Mexico coming here, they're not saying, tell me what to do. They're coming in here like, we're going to live together in this house together. We're going to build. We're making money. Then we're going to own the small company. Then we're going to eventually create the consulting company. And you work from there. And we're still asking. So I just say it's a deficit. Everybody's against us, you know, as Black people at this point.
Yeah, we got to know that. We got to know that we own our own. We all we got. Let's talk about leukemia and lymphoma. Mm-hmm. Both leukemia and lymphoma are blood cancers. Mm-hmm. But what's the primary difference between the two?
Honestly, I would have to have somebody. I'm still learning about what's the big difference, to be honest. I don't want to give a medical to say exactly what it is. Right. My only focus with leukemia, it is a blood disease, and there's so many different levels of it. And I honestly, I can't say exactly what the difference is, and I'm still learning.
There's various forms of it, and you know, it attacks the body at different stages.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you're doing it. I mean, it's a worthy cause. It's
Thank
good
you.
To see you involved in that. I did want to ask you this about your tranquil persona. Tranquil persona. You know, like,
why do you always sound like my friends? My friends always say.
You have like a persona where it's like, you know, an unbothered persona, right? It's like you're unbothered. Mm. And it's hard to find that these days. Everybody's so angry. Everybody is very angry. Mm. But you have this persona, and you alluded to it a little earlier about the club business. The club business is a very brutal business. I used to own a bunch of clubs in Houston.
Oh, okay.
So it's a very, very brutal business. And to see you in the bar business, you're in the bar business.
And skincare business too.
Yeah. But I want to talk about, I want to mention the skincare business, but I want to talk about the bar business in particular. That is a very brutal business. How do you maintain your sanity in a business like this?
So when I first started, I died the first year. I knew nothing about the bar business. You know, I had to figure out how I was going to protect myself from people from stealing.
I was about to say, did you get ripped off?
Oh, man. These bartenders are cold. I mean, I had people, they're counting. They count ways to, you know, to count the liquor, and then, you know, the money, and their friends are taking money. Like, it was so much to learn in a year, but I did it. I did it. And when I tell you, it made me so sharp. Like, as far as now, I can go in and identify. That's the whole reason now I don't want to have like a full operating. You need a really, really good team, you know. So I have to understand what's my strengths. I like to create. You know what I mean? And the bar was just a small part of it. And I was just like learning as I go. But the first year I died. I mean, seeing people steal, people complaining, fraudulent money, you know, people that it was hurtful to me because I'm like, man, do you not see that I'm doing this for us? Why would you come in here and try to give me counterfeit money? You know, I'm literally getting into it with guys like, really? Like, you know, what is this? You know, so it broke me down. Mm-hmm. But in that breakdown, I was so strong. Oh my God. I honestly, and I mean, just working in banking in general, when it comes to counting money, like I can count money with my eyes closed, you know, and all of that. But to actually know and to have a system, I did it, you know, and I don't know. I just knew that was a way of getting people to connect socially. We like to drink in Texas, and I wanted to get people in the room.
Where'd you find the strength?
You know, I had a therapist ask me that. She asked me what my mom did and what my father did. And because at the time I was like 30 when I opened the bar in Third Ward. Rent, about $12,000 a month for this huge space right there on Sophomore San Jacinto. It was the big house. It's a pink house.
That's not the old Groovy Grill, is it?
It was called Chateau like back in the day. But okay. It was been other names. But it was a huge like mansion estate that was a bar right there on that corner. I just went for it. I think in my mind, I think I'm unstoppable, to be honest. And I know that I feel I have this magic, which I call it my magic, that if I think of something, everything else is going to connect with it. I mean, I know how I'm going to pull it off or what I'm going to do, but I know that my mind, if I think of something, is going to happen. And then everything else just kind of goes along with it and it connects the dots. I had never owned a bar before. I didn't even know how to make drinks. To be honest. Yeah. So I'll just, and then I called one of this, I ain't gonna say his name, but you know, in a male dominant industry, these promoters and all these guys with these bars, like, hey, can you help me? I wanna learn how to, you know, how do I get a liquor license? Oh man, you can't get a liquor license. You need an attorney to get a liquor license. You need all of this. And then it was like, nobody wanted to really help me. You won't come just promote here in my space. You know, you can come in. Mm-mm. When I say that, even the people that I thought we were cool, that these promoters and, you know, I'm on the corner of Sophomore San Jacinto at the time. And so this Almeida, you got 5015, you got Turkey Leg Hut, you got all these places. And I'm like, man, can y'all help? I want to learn. Can you teach? Nobody. All right, I'm going to do it. So I didn't get an attorney to get a liquor license. I didn't even have all the stuff to open the bar. I literally had to learn, like literally just kind of learn, what do I need? The permits, you know, what is this? And I had one guy who had a prominent live music venue who was calling the city of Houston on me because he didn't understand how I got the building that I got and how it passed all the codes. White guy here in Houston. Mm-hmm. Been making money off
What's that sucker name?
He been making money off of
us. What's that sucker name? Come on.
Making money.
Man, let's put him out there. Let's expose him. Come on, Jazz. Give me the name.
I ain't gonna expose him.
Give me the name.
I ain't gonna expose him.
Give me
I'm
the
let
name.
Him.
I do the rest.
You put the fifth one be.
Give me the name. I do the rest.
You know, I ain't gonna put him out there like that, man. But I will say that I even went to him and was like, "Hey, you know, I want to open a live music venue. You know, you had this place for a while ago and musicians and stuff. Can you, you know, your bar is closed, you know, oh, you ain't gonna be able to get that building. That's hard. That's just too much. You're not gonna make it a year there." And I did. I made it 3+ years. Then the pandemic came and so I closed.
And now you're back at it again.
Yeah.
And you're going again.
And going again.
We're about to run this thing.
We're going to run it in. You know what I'm saying? I'm back and better downtown, right across from the Toyota Center.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Great, great location.
Thank you.
And great hospitality, great service.
Thank you.
I can attest to that. How do somebody get in touch with you if they want to reach out?
So they go to the website, which is thelacechateauhouston.com. They can locate when we have events. If they want to book the venue, they can also email us at info@thelacechateauhouston.com as well.
Ladies and gentlemen,
so, yeah.
Jasmine Terry.
Yay!
Thank you.
Thank you.
No more talks.
This episode was produced by A. King and brought to you by
the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio.
The hit movie Bob Marley One Love is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life of an icon who inspired generations with his message of love, peace, and unity. Rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/One Love to try it free now.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
When George Floyd got killed, I started reading a book called The History of the United States. And that's when I saw that Christopher Columbus was just as racist as Hitler. And I didn't know. Maybe you didn't either. Here we are, season three of I Didn't Know, Maybe You Didn't Either. In season three, we connect the dots from the enslavement periods to things happening today. Binge season three of I Didn't Know, Maybe You Didn't Either on the Black Effect Podcast Network, the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.